Hey, welcome into Positive Light, where we're bringing a positive influence into this world and into your life. And hi, I'm Bob Miles. And today's subject is going to be on the Beatitudes that Jesus preached on from the Sermon on the Mount. And from Matthew 5, 1 through 11, it says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.'" And Rick Warren writes on the Beatitudes of Jesus and life's 8 healing choices. "We all have hurts, habits, and hang-ups. What's yours? Stress, fears, overwork, unhealthy or unholy attractions, addictions, regrets, worry, bad habits, anger, dishonesty, the overwhelming need to control, finances, perfectionism, resentment, compulsive thoughts, and the list goes on. Every problem in your life has the same root cause. Every problem in your life starts when you play God." Jesus starts his most famous Sermon on the Mount by saying, "I want to tell you 8 ways to be happy. And the way you think you're going to be happy is not at all the way the world tells you to be happy." Jesus states each of these 8 ways to be healthy are what we call a beatitude, and we refer to them as life's healing choices. The first beatitude is the first healing choice, which I refer to as a reality choice. For getting rid of your habits, your hurts, and your hang-ups, the mess you up your life. Matthew 5:3, the first beatitude, God blesses those who are poor and realize their need for Him, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. And what does it mean to be poor in spirit? It means I admit I need help and that I am powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing. And my life is unmanageable. That is what it means to be poor in spirit. It means to acknowledge that I cannot control and manage everything in my life, but I need God's help. The second choice is the hope choice. It is a choice to earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to Him, that He has the power to help me to change. It's based on the second beatitude found in Matthew 5:4. God blesses those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The third choice is a critical choice, because the next 5 really build on whether you make a commitment to this or not. That's why we call it the commitment choice. Jesus said, Matthew 5:5, "God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the earth." And to be meek means to consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. The fourth choice is called the house cleaning choice. We make this choice when we say, "I openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone I trust." Jesus said in this beatitude in Matthew 5:8, "God blesses those whose hearts are pure, for they will see God." And being pure in heart means getting what's on the inside of me on the outside of me. And the fifth choice is the transformation choice, in which I voluntarily submit to every change God wants to make in my life and humbly ask Him to remove my character defects. It's based on what Jesus said in Matthew 5:6, "God blesses those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they will be satisfied." When I make this choice, I'm deciding that I want to follow God to replace my hurts, habits, and hang-ups with a whole new life. The sixth choice is the relationship choice. Jesus said in Matthew 5:7 and 9, "God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those who work for peace, for they will be called the children of God." This is where I evaluate all of my relationships, offer forgiveness to those who have hurt me, and make amends for harm that I have done to others, except when to do so would harm them or others. The seventh choice is the growth choice. I start to grow and get spiritually healthy and develop maturity when I reserve a daily time with God and Bible readings, self-examination, and prayer in order to know God and His will for my life and to gain the power to follow His will. And the eighth and final choice is the sharing choice. When I turn outwardly and help others to take these same steps, it's part of being a peacemaker, and it's really the great result of having started walking through recovery. Nothing is more contagious than a life-changing power of the gospel. So long before there was a recovery or addiction program, Jesus used one of his greatest sermons to lay at the foundation for our healing from every hurt, habit, and hang-up. The world needs these Beatitudes. In case you haven't noticed, our world is becoming an increasingly frightful, hateful place. Jesus warned that in the last days the love of many would grow cold, and it's not difficult to wonder if these words are being fulfilled in our time. We're fractious, we're angry, we're greedy, we're divided, we're profane, we're depressed. All this, and yet the case can be made that the last 50 years, at least in the United States, represents the greatest half century of human civilization ever in terms of prosperity and ease of life. There is something seriously broken about the American national character today, which may be a concerning issue right at this moment. You know, if things start to break around us, like the economy or our national security, then things are going to break bad in a big hurry, in a big way, all around us. The loudest cries these days for fixing things point to Washington, D.C. The government will save us from ourselves. Get the right leaders in place, the right party running things, the right justices calling the shots, then we'll be happy and peaceful. But the government is made up of the same fractious, angry, and greedy people as us. So how can this possibly end well? Well, let's look at the 20th century. It won't. The Beatitudes offer a potent antidote to the toxicity that's all around us, because the life to which they point drains the poison of hate away from our hearts. Even in the attempt to live out, these values will bring healing and hope. A little bit of humility and or mercy can derail a whole lot of selfishness. The church also needs these Beatitudes. It's not only the unchurched who are clamoring for Washington fixing, it's the church. This isn't without reason, because humans are communal creatures. We are, by nature, political creatures. Politics is the process of defining the priorities and values around which we gather. Obviously, the church should be very much a part of this process. Where things get slippery for a follower of Christ is when a subtle shift takes place in our thinking, where we start believing the power is what ultimately will change the world. To that idea, the Beatitudes rebuke us. It's one thing to vote for a profane and vulgar man because his policies will be beneficial to us and our country. But let's not find ourselves excusing the profaneness and vulgarity, button our lips from calling out the profaneness and vulgarity, adopt the profaneness and vulgarity for ourselves, find our allegiance to party trumping, our allegiance to the kingdom of heaven. The first generation of Christians had absolutely no power, not a shred. Yet following the path paved by the Beatitudes, in just one generation they caught the attention of the greatest power the world had ever known by then. In two generations they faced down the savage might of that world power and could not be destroyed by it. In three generations they caused the value system of the world power to begin to crumble from within. And a generation or two later, followers of Christ were found in every corner of the Roman world, and the world on the street regarding these Christians was, "See how they love one another." If a few unborn babies can have their lives saved by adding a justice to the Supreme Court, then it would be worth it to help that happen. But casting a vote won't win the war if half the country is simmering in anger and resentment, which it will unleash the first chance it gets. To change the culture, then the values of this culture must be changed. For that to happen, it must see those values lived out and hear reasons why those values are preferable to the ones they hold. For that to happen, the church must start acting like a church. And for that, we have our marching orders. They're called the Beatitudes. And so next, I want to introduce the song called The Beatitudes Song by Tommy Walker. And here it is. Thank you.
blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are all those who mourn. They will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are all those who thirst for righteousness. They are the ones who will be filled evermore, filled forevermore. And great, yeah, is there. Blessed are the merciful, they'll be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, they will see God. Blessed are the ones who bring peace, they will be called children of God. Blessed are the ones who endure persecution, living for all that is right. Theirs is the kingdom. And when they are falsely accused, they can rejoice.
And this is what Tommy Walker wrote about this song. The Beatitudes are among the most powerful and countercultural teachings of Jesus. Here we learn that his kingdom is the opposite of the kingdom of this world. Here we see that Jesus values and emphasizes the inner life of the heart before the outward life. For people who feel like the strongest, most righteous, impressive, and capable, the Beatitudes are not great news. For those who recognize their real and enormous need for him, out of Matthew 5:1-12, is the greatest news ever. This teaching of Jesus also reminds us that for those who belong to him, even our most painful and difficult moments, we are blessed. As I was reading the Beatitudes in my devotions one day, I thought, I never put music to this passage, and this song is what developed. I wanted to write a song that is musically sobering. So Jesus told stories. He knew that sometimes the best way to promote understanding was to illustrate rather than to tell. So next, rather than trying to explain more what each of these familiar blessings means, it might be more helpful to use our imaginations to get at what Jesus was trying to show us. And so, what follows is an attempt to use imagination to explore the Beatitudes, and an invitation for you to join me in the exploration. What follows are six stories that are dreamed up, and so let us begin. Blessed are the poor, Julie's story. My name is Julie. I'm a single mom. My husband, Nate, died 5 months ago after a 9-month battle with pancreatic cancer. I have two kids, a boy, Max, 7, and a girl, Natalie, who's 11. I used to make pretty good money working at a large financial firm in Boston, but without Nate's income and with the medical bills piling up, things started to get tight. But we trimmed our expenses as much as we could, got rid of cable and that kind of thing, and we did okay. But my company downsized 2 months ago and I lost my job. The job market is so bad right now, I keep sending out resumes, but I don't get responses. Or I do, but it get turned down after our one interview. I've applied for jobs that are much less skilled and pay less than I used to get. But I'm told over and over again that I'm overqualified and they won't hire me. Even with food stamps and unemployment, we're barely scraping by. I've fallen behind on our mortgage payments. I didn't tell Nate, but even when he first got sick, we started to fall behind. We needed his income every month for those payments. I don't know what we're going to do. My spirit is absolutely crushed. I just don't know what we're going to do. I don't know what made me join the crowd here on the Great Blue Hill, just a few miles outside of Boston. I heard rumors that there was a teacher in the area, and people were saying how wise and compassionate he is. I guess I hoped maybe I could see him and maybe he'd have some words of wisdom about what I can do to save my family from becoming utterly destitute and homeless. Or maybe something to get this sick feeling out of my pit of my stomach. So here I am, sitting on a warm rock surrounded by scrubby grass, people on all sides of me, and he's sitting and getting ready to talk. Blessed are the poor in spirit, he says, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And he looks right at me, just right at me, only for a second, but his eyes meet mine, and I know that even though my spirit is feeling completely destroyed, somehow I am blessed. Not blessed like lucky, not blessed like happy, but blessed. Watched over, accompanied, and suddenly I know that God's presence will give me the strength to go on. Just one more day, and one more day. After that, God is here with me, and I can do it, thanks to God. Blessed are those who mourn. Edward's story. Edward. My name is Edward. I'm 73 years old. My wife Ginny died 1 year and 2 months ago. She was the love of my life. We were married 51 years. We raised a beautiful family. 4 kids. Two of them live pretty close by, in Holliston and Stoughton. I see them now and again. They don't have kids. Doris does have kids, but she lives in Iowa. Scott, the oldest, moved to Germany for his job. His kids speak German as often as they speak English. Anyway, I still live in our house, where we lived for 48 of our 51 years of marriage. Every time I turn a corner, I expect to see her. The whole house is full of memories. The table where we shared meals and had heated discussions, and the couch where we made up when we argued. or the rocking chair she always sat in while we watched the 6 o'clock news, and then competed with each other to get the answers on Jeopardy. And the bed, I still kiss her pillow every night before I go to sleep. I just don't know why I'm still here. Why I'm still here without her. My health isn't so great, so why can't I just leave this world and join her? I feel like I'm just biding my time until the good Lord calls me home. I don't know what he's waiting for. My heart is broken, and this grief will never go away. My son, the one from Stoughton, brought me up here today. The walk up this darn hill nearly killed me, but no such luck. We're going to hear this preacher talk, but I don't know what for. Nothing's going to make me feel better without my Jenny. But Michael wanted me to come, so here I am. And then the man speaks, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted." Is it true? Is there a blessing of comfort for me? Is there? Not that grief itself is good, but maybe that when we're alone and hurting, in the lowest place where I am now, that we're in the very place that God comes. It is possible that God is blessing me, maybe even through God's own tears. Is God maybe grieving right along with me? Maybe there's just the tiniest glimmer of hope. Maybe. Thanks be to God. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Darnell's story. I know what it's like to be hungry. When I was growing up on the west side of Chicago, we never had enough food. There weren't free lunch programs or anything, so my brother and sister and I often went through the school day feeling the pain in our stomachs from hunger. We made it, though my siblings and I, we all worked hard, and two of us made it through college. I got a business degree, and I'm executive in the firm just outside of Boston. But being an executive isn't as important to me as my other job, my real job. My name's Darnell, and I'm what we call a kitchen cabinet member. I volunteer my time and my connections to raise money for the Greater Boston Food Bank. My paid profession gives me lots of contacts around Massachusetts, and I raise awareness about hunger in my social and professional circles. It's not a lot of time, a couple events a year and some networking in between, but it feels like I'm doing something. The thing is, a lot of people don't know about how much hunger there is in Massachusetts, especially in the wealthier suburbs of Boston. But it's here, and it hurts. And it's unacceptable. Where's the justice? Where's the hope? I've heard about a man who's making his way on foot around the area, and curiosity got the best of me. He's wise, they say, compassionate, looking for the one society has forgotten. Wait, what's that he said? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed? Yeah, I'm blessed. And maybe God really is on the side of the poor after all. Maybe what God really wants is for us to be on the side of the poor, on the side of justice too. Blessed and blessings. That's what it's all about. Thanks be to God. Blessed are the merciful. Lisa's story. I'm exhausted. My work has worn me down, and so I came up to this hill today to take a break, to get some fresh air, to look out over Boston from up high. And when I got here, there was a crowd already here. I wonder who this guy is, the ones who's talking, and what he has to say. My name is Lisa, and I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse at a nearby hospital in the psych unit for 18 years. I work with profoundly mentally ill people on locked unit. Some of our patients have been hospitalized most of their lives by this point. A lot of them are physically sick too, and lots don't have any family or friend who ever come to check in on them. And that abuse so many have suffered, it breaks my heart. It just breaks my heart over and over again to see how broken humankind can be. My job is dangerous. I've been assaulted twice in less than 2 years. Most of my coworkers have been hurt too, because we just don't have enough people working to keep the angry and the aggressive patients calm. It's just so hard in so many ways. So why do I do it? Well, because I love it. I hate a lot of things that go along with it, but I love taking care of people who really need it. I try so hard to see the person who's inside, who's underneath all that craziness, and sometimes I do get a glimpse. Not always. I'm no saint. There are some patients that I really dislike, and some days when my heart feels completely hardened. But when I try to stay open and I see the hurting person in front of me, it's then that my heart pours out to them, and I feel such love that it takes my breath away. And so, day after day, I take a deep breath, and I forgive the patients who get out of control, because I know that they're even more out of control inside, and it kills them to feel the way they do. And I try to forgive myself when I can't be as compassionate as I want to be. Blessed are the merciful, I hear the man on the hill say, for they will receive mercy. Maybe the mercy and compassion I show my patients is worth a lot more than it sometimes seems. And is God merciful too? Maybe somewhere in all of this, not only am I blessed as I go about my work, but God is blessing my patients too. Blessings me as I go to work and try to bring compassion to my patients. Mercy and blessing all around us, even in these broken and dangerous and frightening and such very human experiences. What a wondrous thing. Thanks be to God. Pure in heart, Sarah's story. Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. It doesn't matter how many times I say that, it always sounds weird coming out of my mouth, you know? Look, my story isn't much different than so many other people's. I was never homeless because of the drugs or booze, and never lost a job because of my addictions, which is kind of miraculous. Actually, I didn't get divorced. Well, I never got married, and maybe my substance abuse had something to do with that. I don't know. Anyway, like I said, it's not an unusual story. There are many people who get up and go to work every day who look like they have it all together, who really are falling apart inside. What's been amazing to me is to find all these people out there who are like me. And when I go to meetings, it doesn't matter what education we have, how much money we make, what color our skin is, whatever, because we all are learning how to look past all this stuff. We're learning to look in each other's eyes and see a sister or brother who knows our struggles, knows what it's like to feel completely powerless over a stupid bottle or pill or needle or whatever. An addiction makes us all equal, and it's good. So when a guy from my Saturday meeting said I should go check this guy out up here on the mountain, I thought, why not? And here I am, the breeze blowing over my face, 5 months, 2 weeks, 6 days sober. And I hear him say, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. I see God every morning. I see God every time one of us begins to let go of all that stuff that has caused so much pain and confusion over the years. The stuff that led us to use and the stuff that happened after we did. We're not perfect. None of us are. Lots of us slip. I've slipped twice and started counting my days of sobriety from zero again. But it isn't going to back to the beginning, because I keep learning and letting go, clearing out and opening up. We're all working on cleaning out the garbage and making room for something whole and healthy, maybe even sacred or holy. Maybe that's what pure of heart means. And maybe we addicts and alcoholics, well, everyone really, can be pure, not perfect, but open and empty and waiting for God, thanks to God. Peacemakers and persecuted, Mike's story. So there's this kid in my school who's always getting picked on. He's a sophomore and I'm a junior. Oh right, my name's Mike. Anyway, I don't know, this kid's small and kind of weird. Well, maybe not weird, but super quiet, you know. And kind of doesn't participate in stuff, just kind of an outsider. Ever since we were little kids have picked on him, knocking his books out of his arms, putting gross stuff in his locker, calling him names, posting stuff on Facebook that's just totally trashing him. And there's a couple of guys who have started pushing him and tripping him, and all that when he's walking down the hall. It's so lame. But you know, they get lots of laughs, and so they keep doing it. And he doesn't really help himself, he just kind of takes it. But this one day, I was walking home after school and turned the corner to the back parking lot, and I saw these three guys take the kid and start shoving him around between them, back and forth, and spinning him in circles. He fell, but then they kind of got to his knees. But then one guy shoved him over and it was way out of control. So I jumped in and tried to stop them, but they started pushing me too, and they started swinging, and it was just nuts. Just crazy. Fists and feet flying everywhere, and I'm yelling at them to stop, and I'm landing a punch here and there, but I'm getting it better than I'm giving it out. And the kid's crying on the ground, and I don't even know what's up. And then the vice principal is there, pulling everyone apart, and we all get suspended 2 weeks. There were some other kids standing around, watching, cheering, whatever, and some of them tried to say that it wasn't this kid's fault. He was being bullied, and that I was just trying to stop them from beating up on him anymore. But we have this zero tolerance policy at school. No violence, period. I thought my parents were going to kill me. Like, seriously, kill me. When I told them what happened, and then my friend Lily called and told them what I had said was true, she was watching it. They said they were proud of me for standing up for someone and trying to calm everything down. And there's been a stupid stuff on Facebook talking about how I'm a weird as the kid. They're not using language that's nice, but you know what I'm saying? And calling me names and threatening me, but I don't care. Because what they were doing was so wrong. Just crazy wrong. And I don't care if people don't like me for defending that kid. It's just not cool to bully someone like that, and I'll keep saying it forever. So my aunt, who totally cool, got my parents to let me come with her today. I don't know what to make of this guy yet. I kind of don't get what he's saying, but people are really listening. Wait, was that what he said? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted and for righteousness sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Huh, cool. Thanks be to God. Blessed are you, and rejoice and be glad. Jesus did not say that blessed means happy. He did not say that blessed means perfect. He did not say that we had to live our lives by a moral code listed out in 12 verses we call the Beatitudes in order to earn entry into the kingdom of God. No, this is what Jesus preached on that mountain. When we have nothing, then God fills our life. When we are powerless, there is nothing but the infinite power of God. When we are stripped naked, we are clothed in the glory God gave us. It is in the darkness and the chaos that God creates. When we are on the cross, we are where God saves. When we are in the grave, we are where God raises up. When we are weak and discouraged, alone and hurting, in that lowest place, we are in the very place where Christ comes. We are accompanied, we are blessed, rejoice and be glad. So that brings us to the end of our episode. I hope everybody enjoyed what was talked about today. And my closing prayer, as always, is that God blesses the journey that you're on with Him and that you embrace that journey. So next week's episode is going to be on We Are All Called to Be Ministers. And you can catch me and connect with me at positivelightpodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Hey, and remember, you can get my podcast anywhere you download your podcast for free. And hope everybody had a great week. God bless. We'll catch you next week.